go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 73 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate, and our co-host for this episode, Willow, back for a second episode. Say hello to the camera, Willow. All right, that's as much as you're going to get out of Willow. She is not a high energy dog. She is more of a lap dog. So she likes licking my fingers and my hand. I was eating candy corn, so she probably, is eating the remnants of sugar on my fingers. All right, into the episode. Since Willow can't speak human, I will be doing most of the speaking this episode. Actually, I'll be doing all the speaking. Where shall we go this episode? Last episode, it was baseball. When this is coming out, will the Yankees still be in the playoffs? I don't know. I filmed this a little early, as you know, so I fingers crossed, hope they are still in the playoffs. If not, baseball's over. Once the Yankees lose, I stop watching baseball, on to the New York Giants. But this is about being funny, not sports. If you want sports, go to another podcast. This is Verbal Graffiti. Let's talk about speakeasies. In the town in which I reside, there is a speakeasy that just opened up. I know it opened up, not because I went, because I had several family members who saw an advertisement for it or a story, a reel on Instagram, and they asked me and sent me the reel. That's how I found out about the speakeasy. It's in the center of Wallingford, Connecticut. The outside, the facade is a old school VHS type store. Think a Blockbuster, but local. Mom and pop shop, and you go in, you press a button, and behind that is a cocktail, establishment, a speakeasy. Great. I love the fact that we have a new place to drink and consume alcohol here in my town. Problem is false advertising. I have not yet been to this speakeasy because I know that the cocktails there are going to be overpriced. And there was a bar on that street called Lenny's where you could get a cold one, a bottle of Bud Heavy for $4. So why would I go to a speakeasy and spend $17 for a mixed cocktail that has, I guarantee you this place has. This irks me where they'll have the shot glass that they pour the shot of the liquor, then they pour it in the mixed cocktail so you don't get any extra alcohol. It's a perfect amount. I need a bartender who just pours, raises a hand, so it gives you a little extra. Gives you a little, life is tough now in America. We're on the brink of civil war, civil conflict. We need a little bit more of one shot in our mixed drink. I usually do whiskey neat, so I need a little bit more. A little ode from the bartender to the patron that, hey, we're all in this together. You tip me, I'll tip you a little extra. I digress. Back to the speakeasy. Questions I have for this speakeasy that I know the answers are yes. Do you have a liquor license to serve alcohol at this speakeasy? Yes. Does everybody know where this place is? Does anybody have access to it who, of course, is over the age of 21 and or has a fake ID if they're under the age of 21? Answer is yes. Do you have a permit for this place? Do you get I don't know. The town of Wallingford, Connecticut, I'm sure if you're going to be selling food and alcohol, there's a business permit. I'm not a business guy, but the permit so that you're allowed to have a business at this location. Do you have that? Did you pay for that piece of paper so that you do not get arrested? Yes. The answers to all these questions are yes, 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 which makes your establishment not a speakeasy. A speakeasy is somebody who sets up shop behind the government without without permission from the town, from the city, from the inspectors. It's it's behind closed doors, literally. They don't have a liquor license. That's what makes a speakeasy a speakeasy. It's selling alcohol illegally. But this speakeasy in my town now, and every speakeasy that you go to in every city in America, they have a liquor license. They advertise it on Instagram, on social media. They say, hey, come to our location, press this, pull on this knob, and then the door opens, and you go behind a wall, and then there's a cool little, ambience. The babes love using that word. There's the ambience, and you pay for an overpriced cocktail that doesn't get you drunk. But it's all above board. But a speakeasy, if you know your history during Prohibition, was below board. It was the black market. So it ceases to be a speakeasy once you go on board. Once you're above, once you do everything is legal and you're paying for all the permits and the licenses and you're checking everybody's ID and anybody can come in. Like, it's not like like a private club where you need to pay a yearly fee to be a member. Like, if anybody can come, who, as long as they know about it, then it's not a speakeasy. It is a gimmick. That's what this new speakeasy in my town is. It's not a speakeasy. It is a gimmick. Now, as a fan of wrestling, I started watching wrestling in 1993, I believe, at WWE. My first SummerSlam I saw was The Undertaker versus Undertaker, oddly enough. Think of that Superman emoji where they're, sorry, not Superman, not Spider-Man, where they're staring at each other. Yes. So, but like I during that period of wrestling at WWF at the time, it was all filled with gimmick wrestlers. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time was Doink the Clown, which is odd because I have a deathly fear of clowns. But I say this because I love gimmicks. Party, costume party, we're all dressing up, and it's like whatever the theme is, cowboys, 90s, boats and hoes, or athletes, or whatever the gimmick is, I am all for it. I'll go all out for the gimmick. I love a gimmick party. I'm actually a believer that there should be cities that are a gimmick 365 days a year. Like, you go to, I don't know, you go to New Orleans and you have to dress up like a musician, or you go to a New York City and everyone dresses up in a suit. Like, you're not allowed in that city unless you're dressed to the nines. You go to San Francisco, you got to dress up like a hippie from the 60s. You go to Colorado, you have to have a mustache. Like, there should be themes for every city. And when you go to that city, you got to dress accordingly. That's how pro gimmick the B-man is. But this is false advertisement. The speakeasies of today are false advertisement, and I'm just calling it out. That's what it is. It is a gimmick, not a speakeasy. So don't, what's that saying? Don't piss in my face don't piss on my face and tell me it's raining. I actually don't mind being pissed on. So if you want to piss on me and you're a hot babe, go for it. But if you're not a hot babe, don't piss on me and tell me it's raining. This is a gimmick restaurant, a bar, which I'm happy. Good for you. I hope they do well. I hope I do get drunk there at some point. If you're in Wallingford, Connecticut, go to Lenny's before you go to this gimmick speakeasy. And I wish them success, but I'm just, it's a little rant on the speakeasies of today. Sometimes you can't go back. Sometimes you got to go forward because the laws change. So to go back, you got to change everything. And none of us have the capabilities of doing that. All right. Willow just sighed. So let's move forward. Was looking at Reddit. Found this one on this subreddit for disability. What do you say when people keep asking if you're tired? I started an internship. Good for you. I work with a bunch of people younger than me. I'm 40s, they're 20s. I am constantly being told I look tired or am asked if I'm tired. I don't know what to say, because on one hand, yes, I'm hella tired. I live with a chronic illness and part of the fatigue in getting easily worn out. But on the other hand, I don't want to seem as though the person who is always tired and can't keep up. I can. The last time someone said something like that, I said, no, I think my face just looks that way. People always think I'm tired. And the girl got visibly uncomfortable and awkward and started to talk to the person on the other side of her. So I'm thinking that was too abrasive and curt. Good adjective. I don't want to tell these people about my health stuff because who knows how ill I'll be seen after that. I don't want them to think I'm incompetent just because I'm a little fatigued. I want them to like me, so I want a lighthearted, kind response that won't get me judged or shunned or make people feel awkward or bad for asking. They are just trying to be nice and show concern, but I'm getting really sick of it. As you should be getting sick of it. Yes, I do believe your instincts are correct in this situation, this predicament that you find yourself in. Yes, you don't want to just be moaning about your chronic fatigue and illness that you have. The last thing any coworker wants is another colleague to show them their my chart. Like, none of us wants to see your my chart. If you're dealing with an illness and it's like a physical illness where you have a cast on, or, you know, something severe like cancer, or you lose all your body hair or something like that. Yeah, there's really nothing we could do as a coworker or a colleague for you. We're not doctors. We're not medical professionals. And we don't care about you because you're our coworker. And most people do not care about their coworkers. Hell, most people don't care about their spouses. So why would the fuck would they care about their coworker? Though, as a coworker, though, we do have to play the politics of office. So what we do, the non-sick people, is every couple months we'll ask you how you're doing with whatever condition you have. With you, it's chronic fatigue, which I do suffer from that as well. The last couple years or so, I'm just fatigued all day long. As soon as I lay down, my body kind of gets numb. I don't know what it is. All I do is I fight through it. I've seen a bunch of doctors. They don't know what it is. They think it's neuropathy, but I don't know. So it's just, but I don't bitch and moan about it at work. I work from home, but if I was in an office, I would not bitch and moan about it because nobody wants to hear about your health issues, especially a colleague. So, yes, but the office politics, as I was saying, is like, we'll just ask you how you're doing every couple months. It's not so much because we care about you. It's more about making ourselves feel good about ourselves. Like, oh, I asked that sick coworker how she's doing, so I faked empathy. Therefore, I feel better about myself, and I could go about the rest of my day and, you know, pretending to do real work, whatever the fuck it is we do in office work if you do have a white-collar job. Yeah, so that instinct is correct. Now, what you need to know is there is quite an age gap between you and the interns. You are in your 40s, me, so am I. Coworkers are in their 20s. You need to know that's why the interns don't like you. That's why they give you the side eye. That's why you need to know they talk shit about you behind your back, and your chronic illness, fatigue, resting bitch face, whatever it may be, that is the side dish of the shit talking they do about you behind your back. The main dish, the main shit they're talking behind your back is your age. Is why the fuck do we have a 40-year-old intern here when every other intern is 20? That is the main conversation that's involving you when you're not in the room, when you're not in the lunchroom or that after work happy hour, that's what's being discussed. And you got, now I don't know you, but I do assume you're taking this internship much more seriously than the 20-year-olds are. I don't know, but I'm guessing maybe you're changing careers, so you need this internship to work out. If it doesn't work out, if you shit the bed at this internship when you're 40 years old, there's nowhere else to go. The only place you can go if you don't get hired after this internship is to a state that has a legal assisted suicide, because your life is over and you need to end it quickly. So this internship is vital for you, for your future. 20-year-olds, not so much. It's another step for them. This is a joke. For them, they think life is going to be perfect. They go from this internship to their perfect job at Google or whatever tech company or law firm. What I suggest you do, there's this new show. I don't think it's new, but it's new to the B-Man. It's called Industry. It's on Max, formerly HBO. It's about how would I explain it? It's a London or Great Britain. I'm not really sure how that all overseas. It's like a London law firm with all these young interns. It's about their personal lives. Like they had the internship during the day, but at night they go to clubs and they're doing lines of drugs that I don't even know the names of. And they end up in some perfect loft apartment that someone's parents pay for at 4:30 a.m. And they're discussing the merits of free market capitalism versus communism. And they're reading clippings of the company they're interning at. And then they go straight from that apartment to the office at 7:30 a.m. They get maybe 2 hours of sleep. They just chug 3 Red Bulls like nothing ever happens. That's the superpower you have when you're 20 years old. Now, you're not that person. You're a 40-year-old. You have chronic fatigue. You just have to understand all the dynamics here. So my advice to you is, frame. You need to set the frame. Now, what I mean by that is you got to make these 20-year-old interns act like a 40-year-old around you instead of you trying to act like a 20-year-old around them. Because I did a bit of teaching in my lifetime and during high school. Our high school age students and teenagers, kids in their early 20s, they have this superpower where they're able to see through adults who are not authentic. So if you're 40 and you're trying to act younger than you really are, they see right through that and they'll call you out on that. That's just a superpower that young people have. So don't try to act like a 20-year-old. Like, don't try to use all the slang, know all the TV shows, all the music, all the drugs and slang and all that bullshit. Just be your 40-year-old self. Like, do the work, engage in conversation that is whatever you're into. Don't try to, talk about whatever club or whatever fucking fake ass speakeasy they went to the night before. Just live life at your own pace and have confidence in who you are and the work you're completing. And what you'll notice when you do that is that the 20-year-olds will mold themselves to fit into your world. And that's what will draw them to you instead of you trying to draw yourself to them. So yeah, work on your frame. If you're able to fix that, then you'll probably get hired and you won't have to commit assisted suicide. Good luck to you going forward. We do hope you get hired full time at whatever company or whatever the fuck it is you're doing an internship for. And we do hope your health does get better. We're rooting for you here at Verbal Graffiti, me and Willow, or is it Willow and I? Let's go look at some photos. Verbal Graffiti, episode 73, segment 2. You may notice that Willow, the family dog, is no longer on my lap. She left for the blankets on the ground right beyond my camera as soon as I told her she would not be paid to be a co-host here at Verbal Graffiti. That's right, we do not pay our co-host or our main host because we are cheap and we're not making any money yet here at Verbal Graffiti. So if you want to work for free for us, call me. My phone number is 203-500-7816. My Gmail account is Brian, B-R-I-A-N, dot G-L-S-S, without the A, at gmail.com. Whoever has the A, they had that before I signed up for Gmail years ago, so that's why it's G-L-S-S. You know, I want to bounce back to this topic of speakeasies. We already know that the places that are calling themselves a speakeasy are not actually speakeasies because they're above board. They're paying taxes. But what is, like, who is a speakeasy of the 2020s, of the 21st century? It's got to be an illegal entities, something that's running below board, that's not paying taxes, that's not forming an LCC for their entity. What is it? No, I've never been to one of these, but the definition, modern day, would be sex clubs, swinger clubs, clubs like these where you're going, you're swapping partners. The only way you're able to get into them is if you know somebody who knows somebody, or if you're a certain number attractiveness. So you got to be, if we're doing a number ranking 1 through 10, you're an 8, 9, 10, or you're a guy who could bring multiple 8, 9s, or 10s to this, you know, to this secret club. That is the modern day speakeasy, because these entities are not paying taxes. There really is like a hidden door with a certain knock, a code, a number that you to get in. Like, it is shady. There is an actual bodyguard guarding the door if the police do come and try to bust it open and things like that. Or maybe like nail salons that are doing like rub and tugs, behind the curtain, things like that. Those illegal activities that you're paying money to get into, but you got to be in the know to know where it is. That is the 2024 speakeasy. It's not the fancy bar that's putting reels on Instagram and begging everyone to come with their money. The sex club, the swinger club, the rub and tug, like any kind of club where there's foul activities and a couple bodyguards, and there's probably some people with firearms on their person who work at that club. That's the 2024 speakeasy. I think we've done enough with the speakeasy. It's time to move the fuck forward. So let's do that. Never look in your rearview mirror. Forward only. This comes from the subreddit Ask Women Over 30. I'm single, no kids, few friends, stuck at $65,000 to $75,000 salary range. My rent goes up every year, and not confident enough with my finances to get a pet. I spend 10 to 11 hours per day, 5 days a week, at work and commuting to and fro, and on weekends I'm just running errands or catching up with chores. Even now, I'm staring at a stack of books that supposedly could take me down a better career path, but my verbal skills are the problem. Both ESL and formerly nonverbal autistic in my native language. Fun. And if I don't got it by now, I'll never get it. Plus, I'm visibly old and just can't compete with the kids. I've spent much of my life trying to distract myself, but lately, it's like, what's the point? I feel you. This is why alcohol, marijuana, harder drugs, Keno, online gambling, online shopping, infidelity. It's why all these vices are as popular as they are today. Because life, life is so bland. People are not getting, they're not getting fulfillment from what they do for a living. So they seek out these vices. And yeah, we know these vices, they destroy our lives and they torpedo them into the gutter, and they pull our family and friends down with us. But we know that's the case, but for the few hours or moments that we partake in that vice makes us feel alive. And that's why we give in to the vice, whatever your vice may be. My boy Rudyard, I've mentioned him a few times on this podcast already. Young guy, does anthropology, makes interesting YouTube videos. He made this point, Homer Simpson. We all know who Homer Simpson is. His life, whenever that show came out, was it the late 80s, early 90s? Yeah, he lived in the Midwest. He had a house. He had three kids. He had a stay-at-home wife. He worked just a normal factory-type job. He had a car. He was able to take his family on vacation a few times a year. He was able to do that on one normal salary. And he was looked at as a bum by everyone else in his community. But today, like, no guy, very few men or women can do that. Like, support a family on a single income, like an income like yourself. So you make $65,000 to $75,000 a year. Right in the U.S. median, personally, like, I'm right there with you. I make less money than you do. I make far less than $65,000 a year. I'm right there with you, man. I honestly, every year I get this past year, I got less than a 3% annual raise. It's basically my company just spits on my face every time they give me that annual merit raise. That's, 3% or less. It's, yeah, great. Thanks. And, I work for a company that's now hiring employees from other countries other than the U.S., and it's only a matter of time before AI takes my job or international employees, and I'll be out of a job, and they don't care about me. And it's like, I'm right there. I'm like, I'm not getting any fulfillment from the job. And like, I can't afford a family. That's why I don't have kids. I've been on one vacation the last 10 years. You think I would love to travel internationally? Actually, I'm a bit of a workaholic, so I don't think I could step away from Verbal Graffiti and stand-up comedy for more than a week before I start getting anxious. But yeah, the reason why I don't travel is because I don't have the money to do so. Like, literally, the B-Man. I went to the gas station a few weeks ago. I bought a three-pack of regular Trojan condoms. Cost me $7. Made my stomach drop. It was almost like, do I have the funds to pay $7 for three condoms? Like, that's crazy that condoms are that expensive. And I'm worried about condoms. You're talking about larger things like rent and family. And great. So maybe you get a $10,000 raise. You read all these books. You get a $10,000 raise. So now you're making $85,000. Does that really improve your standard of living? I think not. Maybe you're able to get it gives you a little bit more breathing room. So you're able to get a rescue dog. Is that going to fulfill your soul, your heart? Probably not. You'll love the dog, but what's going to happen is you're going to walk the dog around your block. It's going to bite a couple of the other dogs that are not rescue dogs. And now the neighborhood Facebook group is going to start talking shit about you. And eventually they'll come after you so much that you'll have to put your dog down and you'll be even more heartbroken than you were before you even had the dog. So what I'm getting at here is reading these books and trying to advance your career, it's not going to improve your life, because an extra $20,000, when you factor in things like inflation and rent going up and food going up, and oh, well, that's what inflation is, you're just treading water. So all that time to do the studies, it's really not going to improve your standard of living. And the company you're working for now, if you're, you're in your somewhere in your 30s. So hiring managers, like, you're invisible. The hiring manager, they're not going to promote you to a position where you can really get up that corporate ladder. What the hiring manager is looking for is a 27-year-old who's already worked for three companies, has shown no loyalty to any employer. But for some reason, the hiring manager is going to look at him or her and go, oh, wow, he's worked at three companies. And he or she's going to be fast track to the, you know, up that corporate ladder, and you're going to be left behind and not by seen by anybody, whether it's the company you work for, any other company, the chads out there. No one's going to want to fuck you because you're getting older, you're less fertile, your eggs are, you know, you're not able to make as many children as those women in their early 20s. They're the worst, right? You're invisible to everybody but the B-man. I see you. The fans of Verbal Graffiti, we see you. Do know that you are part of the silent majority. That's not so silent anymore. You always hear that stat that, what is it? Like 80% of Americans have less than $1,000 in savings. So you're mingling, like, that energy you have, that fear of, like, what is life? What are we doing? Like, you're not the only one thinking that. It's fermenting in America and most of the Western world, for that matter, or so I think. Like, that feeling you have, we're all feeling it. So I don't really have an answer for you. I just read your post. I felt it. I'm like, yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm actually even a little bit older and a little bit lower than where you are, you know, standard-wise in America. I guess you can do the silent. Just don't give your company all your energy. It's, sometimes in my company, I think, well, I'm one of the lowest paid people at my company, so I'm not going to let them give me stress. Like, that stress is for people who are making six figures or who are in management. Like, I'm not of management, so I don't let that stress get to me. And I've had to work because I care about my work. I'm a go-getter and a goody two-shoe. So I've had to work to do my work but not really care about it. That's what you got to do, because you're not being paid enough money to deal with the stress. You go to your office and you're inundated with emails before you even, get your morning coffee and get settled for another gluttonous day at the desk. So don't, like, learn to compartmentalize that and not let it eat your insides, and find joy in, I don't know. Like, for me, I find my joy in running, laying in the sun, doing stand-up comedy, telling dirty jokes. Thankfully for me, a lot of things I enjoy don't involve money. So I know I'm a bit of an oddity with that. But yeah, man, I don't have an answer for you. Like, if I had an answer, I probably would not be doing a Smut Humor podcast, a YouTube show. There's no way, man. We're out there. We hear you. You're a silent majority. And, I see you. Verbal Graffiti, the B-man, we see you. On to The Salesman's Wife. We're continued by the great author, John Lawrence. Now, full disclosure, all these erotic literature, now, I've never read any of these. I have a few sites I go to. If I find a cover that I like, I buy a book by the cover, and I hardly ever read them. I have been reading ahead in this book, and I have to say, what I'm going to read this episode and a few episodes going forward, we are, at Verbal Graffiti, we are pro-consent. We're so pro-consent that we're anti-NDA forms. NDA should not be a thing. We are pro, yes, you know, everyone says yes before you engage in whatever activity. Make sure of that. I had to say that because if you know anything about erotic literature, they really do tiptoe that consent line. Full disclosure, we are full. We are 100% consent here at Verbal Graffiti. Now let's get to it. What page are we on? If I could get to, all right, well, all that silent, 11, 12, 13. Okay, page 13. Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. Jesus, Pamela, he said finally. How long is this going to go on? His wife disliked his tone of voice and felt he was being unfair. I'm trying, Alan, she replied somewhat coldly. You know that. I just need time. How much time? He shouted suddenly as his repressed fury suddenly burst to the surface. Christ, I need a good lay. I haven't had one in at least 3 months. I don't mean just having you lie there like you hated it. I mean a real fuck. Alan, don't use that kind of language with me, she shouted back, furious at his display and temper. I'll use any kind of language I want, he snapped. I'm sick of you being like a goddamn princess. Why the hell are you so afraid of sex? Why? Because it's ugly, she blurted out. It's horrible and ugly, ugly. Crap, he shouted back. That's what those dried-up dames taught you in that damn boarding, turning the page, school. It's most natural thing in the world, for Christ's sake. In a frenzy, he suddenly unbuttoned and unzipped his tight Levi's and jerked the pants and undershorts down to completely expose his huge, swollen, and hairy dangling balls beneath. At the sight of it, Pamela drew back a gasp of horror and drew her hands over her eyes. Alan, don't! Look at it, he cried, grasping his hardened, potent tool with his broad hand. It's a cock, a man's cock. Look at it. Stop it, she pleaded, tears filling her eyes. But Alan couldn't be stopped. He was caught in a rising torrent of rage and frustration that exploded now with force of a bomb. No, babe, he replied, his eyes glazed with lust. I'm not stopping now. I want a good fuck before I leave here, and I want it now. Now! He quickly stripped the pants the rest of the way off and approached the bed like a panther stalking his victim. Pamela cowered fearfully, her eyes wide with terror. She held the top of her nightie tightly like a little girl, and her body shook with fear. Alan! Alan! No! She groaned as she sensed he had taken leave of his senses. He hovered over her, licking his lips at the sight of her voluptuous, cream-white body. Roughly, he reached out with a strong hands and tore away the flimsy nighty until she lay naked and trembling on the bed. As I said, all of us here at Verbal Graffiti, we are very pro-consent. Till next episode, go suck a fat one.